history. This also included air-launched missiles from fighter jets. What did Iran possess in order to overcome this size of defense system? It had completed the reverse engineering of the Scud missiles imported from Libya and developed the Shahab-1 missile with a range of about 300 kilometers. Military sources claimed Iran handed over its Shahab arsenal to Oman, Syria, and Hezbollah after achieving longer-range missiles. In the early 90s, Iran developed the Shahab-2 missile, similar to the Russian Scud-C. Soon after, Iran created the Shahab-3 missile. With a range of 2,100 kilometers, it can hit targets with over 1 ton of explosives. The Shahab-3 was considered Iran's most important deterrent against Israel's attacks in the 1990s. The most important tests of the Shahab were conducted in the desert of Qom, central Iran. In November 2001, Iran equipped its missiles with cluster warheads. On November 7, 2003, the Washington Post reported that the Islamic Republic of Iran had developed a missile named Shahab-4, but had halted its production. The missile, capable of reaching Europe with a non-nuclear warhead, could pose a threat to Israel if equipped with a heavier weapon. The regime's prime minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, claimed that Iran has two other versions of the Shahab missile, namely the Shahab-5 and the Shahab-6, which have a range of more than 15,000 kilometers and are capable of striking any point on the planet. However, Iran has never commented on these claims. Iran has missiles called the Qadr-F and the Qadr-H. These missiles can be prepared for firing in less than 30 minutes and are considered tactical weapons with a range of 1,650 kilometers. Some categorize these missiles as hypersonic. Iran has also designed a missile named the Qiyam without wingtips, giving it extremely high radar evasion capability. Arming the Qiyam for firing takes only 20 minutes. Sajid is a different type of Iranian missile with a two-stage engine that runs on solid fuel. It is a mid-range missile with an operating range of 1,900 kilometers. Sajid can cover the distance from Natanz, which Israel aspires to hit, to Tel Aviv in less than 7 minutes. The Sajid 2 has a wingtip on the cap, significantly increasing its accuracy to below 50 meters. The Sajid 2 is guided through a combination of inertia, cap, and accurate gyroscopes with GPS positioning. Iran's missile experience, which began with Scud missiles, gradually led to the development of the Imad precision strike missiles. Imad has a range of 1,700 kilometers and features a warhead with wingtips, allowing Iranian users to guide it until the moment of impact. Unlike ballistic missiles, which hit targets like a stone after the warhead engine shuts off, Imad dives towards the target like a guided projectile. On February 13, 2024, Iran conducted a different experiment. The Aerospace Force of Iran's Islamic Revolution Guard Corps fired a series of Imad and Qadr-F missiles with guided warheads at a specific target. The Palm Achim Air Base, the main location where Israel's F-35 fighter jets are kept. The Israeli Prime Minister had threatened Iran militarily at this base, with the American F-35 fighter behind him. The Palm Achim base is about 15 kilometers long. Iran simulated the plane hangar map for the test. impact points were recorded by remote control cameras known as GoPro. Warheads of the missiles were non-explosive to accurately calculate the point of impact. After traveling about 1,500 kilometers, the MOD missiles hit the simulation targets and tents with high accuracy of 4 meters. This is a scene of the warhead hitting without a missile and the volume of dust rising due to the impact of the warhead. If the missiles were equipped with their famous high explosive warheads, a hell of fire would form at the impact site. In 2007, Iran tested a missile named Ashura. Iran's defense minister stated that the missile had an operational range of 2,000 kilometers. Uzi Rubin, the former head of Israel's missile department, reacted by saying, "If the information about this missile is correct, its construction is an important milestone in Iran's missile program." Ashura uses solid fuel, which greatly reduces the possibility of tracking the rocket launcher by satellites and aerial radars, and allows the missile to be transferred from one point to another. The military official from the Israeli regime also stated that the missile can hide and its preparation for launch does not require much time. Iran produced the Khaybar and Khorramshahr series of missiles. The accuracy of these missiles is less than 10 meters, and at a range of 2,000 kilometers, their accuracy is below 30 meters. The guidance and control system operates in the middle phase of the flight, with guidance occurring outside the Earth's atmosphere. Upon leaving the atmosphere, missile's main engine shuts off when the fuel runs out and its warhead separates. Four small control motors and four small guidance motors outside the atmosphere guide the warhead. This missile can change and correct its direction outside the atmosphere, making it very difficult to intercept by anti-ballistic missile defense systems. As it moves towards the target, the missile rotates and its warhead rains down on the target, breaking into 80 smaller rockets near the target. This missile poses a serious threat to Israel as it covers all parts of the occupied territories. Iran's missile power is based on the Scud missiles it acquired at the beginning of the Iran-Iraq War. Through reverse engineering, Iran developed its own technology. But are these few missiles all Iran can muster to fight the Israeli regime? Facing Iran is the entire NATO defense system, and an attack on Israel requires special equipment. Does Iran have what it takes?
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Seven, there is pressure.
We come to you, and O God, knowing that thou art our only King.
You are listening to the program Bookshelf on Iran Radio with Sheikh Yasir, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
A'udhu billahi min ash-shaytan ar-rajim. Bismillahi ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Alhamdulillahi rabbil alameen. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad wa ajjil farajahum. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh. My dear brothers and sisters, inshallah, I hope that this Shahr Ramadan that has gone past has been beneficial. I also hope that you have prayed for us. as we have done for you, inshallah. And we pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala gives us the ability to experience another blessed Shah Ramadan, inshallah. And that for us to become closer to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and to make better use of the blessed month of Ramadan if we did not make the best use in this blessed month. For only Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala knows how many Shah Ramadans we have in our book of life. But one of the books that we would like to introduce on this, the ending of the blessed month of Ramadan, is a very important book. It's a book that in recent history or in contemporary times has taken a very important place in Islamic thought. It is a very fundamental book. This book previously was translated, but it was very, the actual notes of Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Republic of Iran, that those notes which he used to teach from were translated first. Later on, the audios of those lectures became available. They were transcribed and they were then translated into English. This book has two translations. The translation which we will be introducing to our dear listeners in this episode is the second translation, which is the better translation. There's no harm in introducing the first translation as well. We'll do that at a later date, inshallah. So the book in its Farsi is called Tarai Kulli Andishe Islami Dar Quran. In the English, it has been translated as Islamic Beliefs, Reclaiming the Narrative. So this is the book that we would like to introduce to our dear listeners in this episode. And we'll speak more about the book in our next segment. So please stay tuned.
Why do we read books in the first place? What are books good for?
We read books because we don't want to reinvent the wheel, if you will.
We'd better take advantage of human cultural and intellectual heritage, particularly related to our daily activities, such as our physical, mental, spiritual, or even religious health.
We can't ignore the past thoughts and experiences. To do so, we need to boost our bookshelf.
Welcome back, dear listeners, to our program Bookshelf with me, Brother Yasser Ibrahim. As stated in our previous segment, the book that we would like to introduce to our dear listeners was titled Islamic Beliefs, Reclaiming the Narrative. It was translated by Brother Alexander Khalili and published by the Ahlul Bayt Islamic Mission in United Kingdom. It is a set of lectures that was delivered in the blessed month of Ramadan in a masjid in Mashhad before the victory of the Islamic Revolution and before the forming of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Inshallah, we'll read a bit from the preface before this segment ends. It's extremely important. Obviously, understand the setting of this particular set of lectures. It is 1974. Before the victory of the Islamic Revolution, and the secret services of the Shah are after any scholar who are speaking about political Islam. So within this particular setting, within this particular time frame, these lectures, in order to provide a correct Islamic worldview to the Muslims at that moment in time, at that moment that is so critical within the formation of the Islamic Republic, you can understand the benefit that these lectures had and the influence these lectures even have today. So in the preface, this is something that is written. It says, setting the scene. The year was 1974 and Iran in this period was a secular country governed by a tyrannical monarch who boasted centuries of monarchical authority while enjoying the backing of major global powers. It was the Ramadan in the holy city of Mashhad in northeastern Iran, and with the call for afternoon prayers sounding in the background, the streets leading to the masjid would be buzzing with men and women of different ages, who in spite of the summer heat and the toll it takes on anyone fasting long hours, would come in droves to a tiny, structurally incomplete masjid to gather in anticipation of the new ideas being delivered from the pulpit. A relatively unknown young cleric donning a black turban and a matching color cloak. It is said that Sayyid Khamenei, Hafizahullah, was about 35 years old when these lectures were delivered. Stood behind the pulpit to deliver his talk. The young cleric known as Sayyid Ali Agha was the resident imam for the small masjid, and during the holy month of Ramadan,
he would deliver his daily lectures while fasting. With his piercing eyes and an eloquent tongue, he would capture the imagination of the audience with ideas that would change the world in their minds. But these were ideas that had the potential to change a lot more than that. Little did the world know at the time that this young Sayyid Ali would be destined for greatness. So this is the setting, this is when the lectures were delivered, the importance of these lectures even till today, and the importance of this book, that this book has become a fundamental book for all Shia, and all Muslims rather, to read, that the foundations and the fundamentals of an Islamic worldview from the Quran al-Mujid is what, inshallah, in our next segment, we will be reading a portion of the actual text, the portion of the lectures of Sayyid Ali Khamenei, Hafadhullah, for the benefit of our dear listeners. So please stay tuned.
Love is everywhere, so much peace fills up the air. Ramadan, month of the Quran, I feel it inside me, strengthening my iman. But how I wish you'd be here with me all year around. Ramadan, 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 ya Habib. Ramadan, Ramadan, laytaka dawman qareeb, laytaka dawman qareeb.
Welcome back, dear listeners, to our program Bookshelf with me, Brother Yasir Ibrahim. The book that we have introduced to our dear listeners was titled Islamic Beliefs, Reclaiming the Narrative. It was translated by Brother Alexander Khalili and published by the Ahlul Bayt Islamic Mission in United Kingdom. It is the translation of a set of lectures that the leader of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Sayyid Ali Khamenei, Hafadhullah, delivered in the year 1974 in the city of Mashhad during the blessed month of Ramadan. So we will be reading from a lecture that he delivered on Monday, the 27th of Ramadan, 1934, which is 1934 of the Iranian month, which is 14th of October, 1974, which is titled in this book, The Wali, the Central Authority, which is a interpretation of verses number 58 and 59 from Surah Al-Nisa, verse number 4. We will ignore the we will ignore the Quranic verse for the sake of getting more from the words of Sayyid. Following on from the previous lectures, I would like now to discuss some of the issues that surround the matter of wilaya. These are not questions about the fundamental aspects of wilaya, such as what is wilaya, where is it found in the Quran, and what are the different dimensions of it. These are topics we have covered already. However, there are a series of issues that arise from wilaya and are subsidiary to it, but which are nevertheless each essential in their own right for the proper direction of the Islamic society. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to enable us to make benefit of the last remaining hours and days of this blessed month, and for us to truly understand who our wali is and to act in accordance with that individual. Inshallah, until next time, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
You just listened to the program Bookshelf on Iran Radio with Sheikh Yasir, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
Thank you. the limelight. President Trump has signed a sweeping executive action to overhaul U.S. elections that would require documentary proof of citizenship to register to vote in federal elections. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The Associated Press has covered the story and tells us more. President Donald Trump on Tuesday, 25th of March, signed a sweeping executive action to overhaul elections in the United States, including requiring documentary proof of citizenship to register to vote in federal elections and demanding that all ballots be received by Election Day. The order says the United States has failed to enforce basic and necessary election protections and calls on states to work with federal agencies to share voter lists and prosecute election crimes. It threatens to pull federal funding from states where election officials don't comply. The move, which is likely to face swift challenges because states have broad authority to set their own election rules, is consistent with Donald Trump's long history of railing against election processes. He often claims elections are being rigged even before the results are known and has waged battles against certain voting methods since he lost the 2020 election to Democrat Joe Biden and falsely blamed it on widespread election fraud. Donald Trump has focused particularly on mail voting, arguing without evidence that it's insecure and invites fraud, even as he has shifted his position on the issue given its popularity with voters, including Republicans. While fraud occurs, it's rare, limited in scope, and gets prosecuted. The executive order's documentary proof of citizenship requirement signals that the president is not waiting for congressional Republicans to pass their long-anticipated Safeguard American Voter Eligibility Act, or SAVE Act, which has aimed to do the same thing. Republicans have defended that measure as necessary to restore public confidence in elections. Voting in federal elections by non-citizens is already illegal and can result in felony charges and deportation. Voting rights groups have expressed concerns that the requirement could disenfranchise the American voters. An estimated 9% of U.S. citizens of voting age, or 21.3 million Americans, do not have proof of citizenship readily available, according to a 2023 report by the Brennan Center for Justice and various other groups. There are also concerns that married women who have changed their names and encounter trouble when trying to register because their birth certificates list their maiden names. Such hiccups happened in recent town elections in New Hampshire, which has a new state law requiring proof of citizenship to register to vote. Donald Trump's order directs federal agencies, including the Department of Homeland Security, the Social Security Administration, and the State Department, to share with election officials federal data that could help them identify non-citizens under voting rolls. It also says the Attorney General should prioritize enforcement of federal election integrity laws in states that don't share information about suspected election crimes with the federal government. The order aims to require votes to be cast and received by Election Day and says federal funding should be conditional on state compliance. Currently, 18 states and Puerto Rico accept mail ballots received after Election Day as long as they're postmarked on or before that date, according to the National Conference of State Legislatures. continue with the Associated Press's coverage of this story. Donald Trump's order is likely to face legal challenges given that the Constitution gives authority over elections to the states. While Congress has the power to regulate voting and has done so to pass such laws as the Voting Rights Act, the Constitution makes clear that states have primary authority to set the times, places, and manner of elections. Colorado's Democratic Secretary of State, Jenna Griswold, called the order an unlawful weaponization of the federal government and said Donald Trump is trying to make it harder for voters to fight back at the ballot box. Democratic Representative Joe Morrell of New York, the ranking member of the House committee that oversees elections, said the executive order is not just misguided, it is immoral and illegal. At least one Democratic attorney on Tuesday, 25th of March, threatened legal action. Mark Elias, who has been the subject of Donald Trump's ire, said in a social media post, "This will not stand. We will sue." The executive branch does have some authority over elections, according to Justin Levitt, a constitutional law expert and former White House senior policy advisor during the Biden administration. Justin Levitt said, "Some federal agencies provide election support, including the U.S. Election Assistance Commission, which distributes federal grant money to states and runs a voluntary certification program for voting systems." The U.S. Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency helps election officials protect their systems. Former President Joe Biden issued an executive order in 2021, directing federal agencies to take steps to boost voter registration, which drew complaints from Republicans who called it federal overreach. Donald Trump has now rescinded that order. Trump's order calls on Election Assistance Commission to amend voting system guidelines to protect election integrity, including guidance that voting systems should not use a ballot that uses a barcode or QR code in the vote counting process. It said the commission should condition the funding it distributes to states on those new guidelines. Virtually all in-person voters in Georgia, as well as voters in several other states, use voting machines with a large touchscreen to record their votes. The machines then print a paper ballot with a human-readable summary of the voter's selections and a QR code, a type of barcode that is read by a scanner to count the votes. It is not entirely clear how the executive order would affect Georgia and the other jurisdictions that use these machines. Representatives for Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger did not immediately respond to messages seeking comment. Raffensperger issued a statement thanking Donald Trump for the executive order, calling it a great first step for election integrity reform nationwide. Representative Brian Steil of Wisconsin, the chairman of the House committee that oversees elections, said the order is a welcome action to secure our elections and prevent foreign influence. National broadcaster CBS News has also covered the same story. President Trump on Tuesday, 25th of March, signed a sweeping executive action to overhaul U.S. elections that would require documentary proof of citizenship to register to vote in federal elections and mandate that all ballots be received by Election Day across the country. The order claims the United States has not adequately enforced federal election requirements that, for example, prohibit states from counting ballots received after Election Day or prohibit non-citizens from registering to vote. The order says the United States has failed to enforce basic and necessary election protections and calls on states to work with federal agencies to share voter lists and prosecute election crimes. The president also threatened to pull federal funding from states where election officials don't comply. David Becker, the chief executive officer of the Center for Election Innovation and Research, characterized the executive order as a federal takeover of the constitutional authority of local and state governments to run elections. David Becker said, it seeks to seize authority over election technology and processes at the state and local level, all while bypassing congressional approval. If implemented, it could cost state taxpayers tens of billions of dollars, he predicted. Though Becker, who is a CBS News election law contributor, also expects that the executive order will face a difficult road in the courts of law. President Trump has long claimed elections were being rigged in the United States even before the results were known. He's battled certain voting methods since he lost the 2020 election to former President Joe Biden, falsely blaming widespread election fraud for his loss. Donald Trump has already promised that more election actions would be taken in the coming weeks. If you're interested to know about history, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune in to IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website at iranradio.ir.
A senior Iranian lawmaker has said,
contrary to Washington's claims, America's
President Raisi has emphasized that
U.S. sanctions have failed to extract concessions from Tehran.
Iran Today.
Winter takes its last breaths. The sun comes back to life and the earth gradually warms up. Trees awaken from their winter slumber and nature bursts forth in a symphony of vibrant colors. Spring is just around the corner. Everyone seems happy and full of hope. It is time to say goodbye to the cold season of the year and welcome a time marked by festivities across the country. During this beautiful transition, the people of Iran begin their preparations for Nowruz. Meaning New Day, this national festival is an ideal time for relaxation and rejuvenation, reconnecting with loved ones, traveling to breathtaking destinations, taking refuge in nature, and truly savoring life. This season grants everyone a precious opportunity to recharge their batteries for the year ahead. Yet, there is more about Nowruz, a festival with its roots in time immemorial. On the eve of the last Wednesday before Nowruz, Iranians traditionally celebrate Chorshanbe Suri. People gather in neighborhoods to light bonfires made from wood and twigs. Participants jump over the flames while chanting Zardi man az to, Surkhi to az man, which translates to, my paleness is yours, your redness is mine. This chant symbolizes the hope for health and vitality in the new year. Setting off firecrackers and fireworks is a common practice to symbolically ward off evil spirits and announce the arrival of the new year with joy. Music, dancing, and singing often accompany the festivities, creating a lively atmosphere. The central message of Chorshanbe Suri revolves around renewal and hope. It embodies themes of purification and the triumph of light over darkness.
Welcome.
Welcome to Golestan Palace, a UNESCO World Heritage Site in the heart of Tehran, where history and culture come together to celebrate Nowruz, the Persian New Year. Nowruz, signaling the arrival of spring, is not just a celebration of nature's renewal, but also a reflection of Iran's rich heritage as well. Join us as we explore the significance of this beautiful festival and what it means to the people of Iran today. As the last moments of the old year fade away, families across Iran gather in their homes, ready to welcome the much-anticipated arrival of Nowruz, the Persian New Year. The air is filled with a palpable sense of excitement and hope as loved ones come together around the beautifully arranged haftseen table, which is a symbol of renewal and abundance. The haftseen table is meticulously set with seven symbolic items, each starting with a Persian letter seen, representing different aspects of life. Sabze, sprouted wheat or lentils symbolizing rebirth and growth. Samanu, a sweet pudding made from sprouted wheat representing power and strength. Senjed, dried fruit of the oleaster tree symbolizing love. Serke, vinegar representing patience and wisdom. Sir, garlic symbolizing health and protection against evil. Sip, apples representing beauty and health. Sumak berries symbolizing the sunrise and the triumph of good over evil. Alongside these, other elements such as a mirror, hyacinth, and coins are placed on the table, each carrying its significance. The declaration of the new year in Iran is not merely a change in time, it is a heartfelt ritual that encapsulates hope, love, and the promise of new beginnings. Surrounded by traditions and the spirit of renewal, each household becomes a part of a greater tapestry woven throughout the country, connecting all Iranians in a celebration of life and the beauty of new possibilities. Dr. Mostafa Pourali from Iran's Ministry of Cultural Heritage, Tourism and Handicrafts explained why Nowruz truly qualifies as a national festival. As a national festival, what do you think are some of the social and cultural functions of Nowruz?
نوروز همون جوری که در پرونده ثبت میراث ناملموس جهانیش هم مورد تایید یونسکو قرار گرفته.
Nowruz transcends ethnic, religious and ideological differences. It serves as a unifying element among all our ethnic groups. In fact, it doesn't matter when the moment of the new year arrives. There's no distinction between Kurds, Lors, Gilaks, Arabs, Baluches and Persians. Everyone celebrates Nowruz. The same applies to the tradition of giving iftar during Ramadan. Even though iftar is associated with Ramadan, those who provide iftar do so for everyone, regardless of whether the recipient is fasting or not, or whether they're Muslim or not. What is important is the tradition of generosity and doing good deeds. When we talk about the cultural heritage of Iran, these are the elements that constitute it.
Nowruz has been celebrated for over 3,000 years, rooted in ancient Persian traditions. Here at the Golestan Palace, the echoes of history remind us how this festival transcends time, uniting generations. Nowruz is not just a holiday, it's a celebration of culture and identity, embraced by all Iranians, regardless of their background. Almost a week before the new year, we were strolling around the palace, captivated by its grandeur, when we stumbled upon a gathering of people relishing a duet. The performers were reciting verses from the Shahnameh, the epic masterpiece by Ferdowsi, one of the greatest poets of this land, whose work is deeply entwined with the themes of Iranian identity and heritage. What struck us was the abundant references to Nowruz throughout the Shahnameh, celebrating it as a festival of the Iranian nation.
Nowruz bude, hast va khahad bud.
Nowruz has been, is, and will continue to be as long as there exists a land called Iran on earth. This ancient festival connects the hearts of us Iranians. When Nowruz arrives, we visit each other, clean our homes, wear new clothes, and welcome freshness, light, and life.
Mohammad Reza Majuni, an Iranian naqqad or epic storyteller, told us about the mythological origins of Nowruz.
Giranmaye Jamshid farzand o, yani farzand Tahmurese Divband.
King Jamshid ascended to the throne after his father, King Tahmuresh, and brought forth a plethora of innovations and inventions over the centuries, ranging from iron extraction and the creation of weapons to the development of clothing and the establishment of occupational groups, including four categories: priests, warriors, farmers, and artisans. He even crafted a throne that he would sit on and, carried by demons, ascend to the sky. When King Jamshid completed all his good deeds, the people of the world gathered around him, brings various gifts, and they celebrated with joy and happiness. King Jamshid named that day Nowruz, and thus laid the foundation for the Nowruz festival.
As we listened, one of the singers infused the performance with a modern melody brimming with patriotic fervor, weaving together the historical significance of Shahnameh with the contemporary expressions of love for Iran. As is tradition, shortly after the new year begins, Iranian TV channels air a speech by the leader of the Islamic Revolution. In this address, the leader reflects on the highlights of the past year and outlines the direction the country should take in the upcoming year. Additionally, he designates a theme for the new year, emphasizing a key priority for the nation. This year, for instance, the leader has named it Investment for Production in response to the country's specific circumstances.
This is Iran Today. Iran Today is broadcast every week on Fridays and Saturdays. The series analyzes major political, economic, cultural, and social events concerning Iran. So don't miss the opportunity to listen to Iran Today on IRIB English Radio.
This year, just like the past couple of years, the occurrence of Nowruz alongside Ramadan provides a unique opportunity for reflection and gratitude. As families celebrate the joys of the new year, they also observe the holy month of fasting. The juxtaposition of Nowruz's jubilant festivities with the spiritual solemnity of Ramadan invites Iranians to have both joy and contemplation.
This year, Nowruz coincides with the holy month of Ramadan. In other words, we Iranians are celebrating our national festival, Nowruz, at the same time as we're fasting, observing a religious obligation. It's interesting to note that last year, we registered the file for the global recognition of iftar and the social and cultural traditions associated with it in UNESCO's Intangible Cultural Heritage List, in collaboration with several other countries. This means that the Ministry of Cultural Heritage has registered both Nowruz, which is a national element, and iftar, which is a religious one, on a global scale. The coincidence of these two provides a great opportunity to promote both. One of the good ideas that my colleagues have in mind for this year's Nowruz table is to adorn it with some elements from iftar tables and add certain sweets traditionally served during iftar. The Ministry of Cultural Heritage has also suggested a central slogan for this season: the Crescent of Nowruz, Nowruz in Ramadan, Iranian heritage. The harmonious coexistence of these two national and religious ceremonies is truly a cultural heritage of Iran that is being well preserved.
This unique overlap encourages a harmonious blending of joy and contemplation, inviting individuals to appreciate the blessings of a new beginning while embracing the deeper significance of their faith. The lively celebrations of Nowruz, marked by colorful gatherings, traditional dishes, and the exchange of well wishes, seamlessly complement the solemnity of Ramadan, where self-discipline and introspection take center stage. This dual celebration encourages Iranians to cherish their cultural heritage and spiritual values. For Iranians, these celebrations are not mutually exclusive, but rather complementary. They often find ways to celebrate the new year while observing the fast, creating a dialogue between festivity and spirituality. This synthesis of cultural and religious practices illustrates the rich Iranian identity. The leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, on the first day of the new year. As a national festival, Nowruz serves multiple functions. It's a time for celebration, a moment for reflection, and an opportunity to strengthen familial and social bonds. Here at Golestan Palace, surrounded by splendor, we can truly appreciate the festival's role in fostering social harmony and cultural exchange. This Nowruz, as we welcome the first day of spring and the blessings of Ramadan, let's celebrate the beauty of unity in diversity. May the new year bring health, peace, and joy for all. Nowruz is not only a celebration of spring, but also a powerful element in public diplomacy. As an intangible cultural heritage recognized by UNESCO in 2010, it holds the potential to promote understanding, cooperation, and connection among diverse nations and communities. We had a conversation with Dr. Alireza Delkhosh, currently serving as Iran's ambassador to Sri Lanka and the Maldives. He provided valuable insights into public diplomacy and its connection to Nowruz. How do you assess the role of Nowruz in fostering public diplomacy in the region?
Diplomacy umumi yek shive novini az diplomacy.
Public diplomacy is a novel approach to diplomacy. It refers to a set of efforts and activities undertaken by governments or institutions to communicate and influence public opinion in other countries. Its aim is to improve the national image, raise awareness of culture and values, and foster positive relationships with foreign people and media. In this light, Nowruz can be seen as a tool in the hands of public diplomacy. Nowruz can serve as a bridge connecting nations. The nations that celebrate Nowruz focus on their cultural commonalities rather than geographical, political, or ethnic divisions. The Nowruz celebration that these nations observe simultaneously, along with traditions that share many similarities, has allowed Nowruz to create a cultural geography composed of various countries, bringing nations closer together in the simplest way possible.
Nowruz transcends national borders, celebrated by various ethnic groups across the West Asia region, Central Asia, the Caucasus, and beyond. This shared heritage provides a unique platform for cultural exchange, inviting countries to engage in dialogue, share traditions, and explore common values. Can you tell us what other countries celebrate Nowruz other than Iran?
Many countries around the world celebrate Nowruz. Officially, it is recognized in 13 countries: Iran, Afghanistan, Turkmenistan, India, Uzbekistan, Azerbaijan, Iraq, Kyrgyzstan, Pakistan, Tajikistan, Kazakhstan, and Turkey. However, it is worth mentioning that in other countries, while not all people, many groups do celebrate Nowruz, ranging from India and China to Balkan nations like Bosnia and Herzegovina.
Moreover, the themes of renewal and hope inherent in Nowruz can serve as a foundation for peace-building initiatives. The holiday emphasizes the importance of harmony and friendship, making it an ideal occasion for diplomacy aimed at fostering better relations between nations, especially in regions experiencing conflict. Events and festivals celebrating Nowruz can also facilitate grassroots diplomacy. By organizing cultural events, workshops, and community gatherings, nations can create opportunities for citizens to interact, learn from each other, and cultivate mutual respect and understanding.
The message of Nowruz is undoubtedly one of peace and friendship. Just as the United Nations has designated a day to celebrate Nowruz, this festival does not solely belong to Iran and this region. In fact, Nowruz belongs to humanity. Everyone should celebrate it, and if some countries do not observe it, it may be because they are unaware of it. Nowruz truly promotes nothing but peace and friendship among individuals and among nations.
this ancient festival can easily attract visitors and therefore can promote cultural tourism. Countries can use this holiday to showcase their unique customs, cuisine, and traditions, thus enhancing bilateral relations through economic cooperation in areas like tourism, trade, and cultural industries. My next question is regarding foreign tourists. Do you have any specific recommendations for them visiting Iran during the Nowruz celebrations?
In our national development program, there has been special attention to tourism. The overall policy is to provide better hosting for foreign tourists so that they leave the country with greater satisfaction and more pleasant memories. My suggestion to tourists coming from abroad is not to limit themselves to a few famous cities in Iran like Shiraz and Isfahan, which are indeed jewels of our history and civilization, but to explore the many attractive cultural and natural areas that remain unknown to tourists. It would be a pity for them to come to Iran and miss visiting these regions, which range from Hyrcanian forests in the north, registered as a UNESCO World Heritage Site, to the caravanserais scattered throughout Iran, some of which date back hundreds of years, and are also included in the UNESCO World Heritage List. By the way, these caravanserais are located in 24 provinces across the country. By visiting various and sometimes lesser-known areas, tourists can have a richer and more unique experience during their travels in Iran.
In Iran, the Nowruz holidays span 13 days. On the 13th day of the new year, known as Sizebedar, literally meaning getting rid of the 13th in Farsi, Iranians traditionally go outdoors to appreciate nature and enjoy picnics. It's common to bring along the sabzeh, sprouted wheat or lentils, from the half-seen table and throw it into flowing water, symbolizing the disposal of bad luck. A charming custom associated with this day involves young, single individuals, particularly girls, tying up leaves from the greenery before discarding it as a hopeful gesture for finding a partner. As Nowruz draws to a close, Iranians transition from the vibrant celebrations of the new year back to their daily routines, rejuvenated and full of energy. Mr. Majuni reminiscent about his childhood experiences during Nowruz, emphasizing the importance of preserving the festival's rituals.
پدرم هر زمان هر ساعتی از شبانه روز که موقع هنگام سال تحویل بود ما رو بیدار میکرد.
Every year when the new year arrived, even if it was midnight, my father would wake us up and say we should sit around the half-seen table. Then he would hug us, congratulate us on the new year and give us our gifts. I will never forget the memories of Nowruz from my childhood. A season of joy, laughter, games, visiting friends and family, evening festivities, and reading the Shahnameh. Nowruz, with all its customs and traditions, has become an inseparable part of our identity as Iranians. It's something we become familiar with in childhood and grow up with. Nowruz is our national heritage, and it must be passed down from generation to generation, just as it has been until now.
That's all for today. Thank you. On behalf of everyone at Iran Today, I wish you a happy Nowruz and a year full of health, wealth, and prosperity. Bye for now.
Listen to the famous reciters of the Holy Quran in the month of Allah. Brother Muhammad Reza Birya, only in IRIB English Radio.
Assalamu alaikum, dear brothers and sisters. Welcome to this segment of the month of Allah. In this segment, we're going to talk about some famous reciters of the Quran in the world of Islam. Today, I want to introduce you to a famous Iranian reciter, Brother Amin Pouya. This reciter was born in 1978 in Tehran. When he was 8 years old, his father started teaching him the Holy Quran, recitation of the Quran. For 6 years, he followed the style of Sheikh Abdul Basit Muhammad Abdul Samad. It's interesting to know that most reciters become familiar with the art of recitation of the Quran through Abdul Basit Muhammad Abdul Samad. The first recitation that they hear is usually a recitation by Sheikh Abdul Basit. That is why you will see that most good reciters begin their path to becoming a good reciter by following the style of Sheikh Abdul Basit Muhammad Abdul Samad. So he followed the style of Sheikh Abdul Basit for 6 years. After that, he started imitating the style of Sheikh Shahat Muhammad Anwar. And it's interesting that he utilizes both styles in his recitation even today. So we could say that he has invented a new style which includes both the style of Abdul Basit and also the style of Shahat Muhammad Anwar. And then, of course, he started listening to other prominent reciters of the Quran, such as Sheikh Mustafa Ismail and Ahmad Shabib. Brother Amin Pouya has participated in many national and international competitions. He placed second several times in the national competitions in Iran, and he was sent to participate in other countries, Quran competitions in other countries. And it's interesting that he placed first in almost all of them, except for the Malaysian competition, which he placed second. But in Tunisia, India, Russia, and other countries, he managed to place first in those competitions. One thing with Brother Amin Pouya, and generally speaking, all other Quran reciters from Iran, is that they have a good knowledge of the maqamat. That is, they learn the maqamat and then use them in their recitation. Some reciters don't have knowledge of maqamat, and they just recite different maqams without knowing them. But Iranian reciters, most of them know the maqamat that they use. Now let's listen to Surah At-Tawbah, verses 122 to 123 by Brother Amin Pouya. Let's enjoy this recitation.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. وما كان المؤمنون لينفروا كافة فلولا نفر من كل فرقة منهم طائفة تفقهوا في الدين ولينذروا